Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 344 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is November 3rd, 2014. Big show for you this week on the podcast, talking about USC's 44-17 win over the Washington State Cougars. If you have any questions or comments for us, we got a bunch of them today. Drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or call us at 206-888-6755, or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. You can leave a voicemail right on the left side of the page. We've got Dan Weber coming up a little bit later on the show. We got Coach Harvey Hyde in the studio right now with us. What's up, Coach? How you doing?
Ryan, I'm doing pretty good, buddy. It's been a good weekend, a busy weekend. Great college football. The Pac-12 is starting to take shape on who's going to be leaders in the North. Oregon certainly has done a great job up there with its big victory over Stanford. Just think for a minute. I know this is a USC podcast, but just think for a minute. Oregon is one bow away from being ranked in the top four. One bow, and if everybody doesn't understand what I'm talking about, in the Arizona game, I can give you his name, but I'm not going to do that. Made a great play. It was a fourth down play. Ran off the field for Oregon. Got near their sideline, and their bench, and bowed to the crowd and bowed to the bench. Well, he was flagged for that, called celebration. Well, that play right now is haunting Oregon, as far as at this current point, I think Oregon will be in the Final Four, but I'm just saying, was that a necessary call? And I'll just leave you on that. And then in the South, of course, wow, what a run it is. There's so many teams that are in it. ASU is the number one so far, but all the two-loss teams are there, and who knows what's going to happen there. But it's exciting, Ryan, and I'm looking forward to doing this podcast with you.
Yeah, there's only one team above 500 in conference in the North. That's Oregon. Five teams above 500 in the South. Arizona State, USC, UCLA, Arizona, and Utah, with Colorado being 0-6. So some struggling and some shifting around going down in the South, and USC can still win it. It's got to be a three-way tie. It's going to be tough because Arizona State only really has one tough game left, but lots of football to be played, so we'll get to that. And I wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. SCTickets.com is the website, or you can call them at 1-800-888-7287. If you need tickets for anything going on, we've got the NBA season heating up. Lakers are on a roll. Not a good roll, but they're on a roll. Clippers end up losing the game, but they look like they're going to be a powerful team this year. If you want to check any of that stuff out, anything in local or across the country, go to SCTickets.com. And they will hook you up. And, Coach, yeah, I just want to kind of get, you know, we don't go too long because we got some questions, but I want to kind of get your thoughts on what USC did to kind of get back into their winning ways and bounce back from that last-second loss to Utah.
Well, I think what they did is, first of all, they're a better football team. And they didn't play scared. They went up there. The weather did not intimidate them. They did what they had to do, which means throw the ball down the field. That opened up the running game, play action pass, which opened up the running game later on. The first half, they really didn't rush the ball well. They selected the proper plays to rush the ball. Play action opened up. Big plays by big-time players. And then on the defensive side of the football, and I have to mention this, it may have been a little bit of a different football game if Holiday stayed in the game, but, you know, whenever that happens to any player, as it did to Suva Craven, I really does take a change of mood in the game for that moment. You want to make sure that kid is okay. Unless you've had it happen to you and you walk out there as a coach and you look down at his face and he's in pain, and all the things he struggled through to get where he is, it's disheartening. And the same feeling I had when I saw Suva Craven go down. I said, oh, my gosh. But to me, right now, currently, he's made a lot of big plays. He's a playmaker, and Leonard Williams is a playmaker, but right now as a young player, Suva Kraven is just an outstanding, great athlete. And one that's coming along pretty fast is Adoree Jackson. I mean, now that's a playmaker. You know, it reminds me of one of my colleagues called me during the Trojan Brunch show yesterday during one of the breaks, and he says, "Coach, you know who he reminds me of?" I said, "Who?" Dell Green, who played for the Washington Redskins, who's now in the Hall of Fame. And he does. He reminds me exactly like him. So I think he has a bright future. He's cocky enough to say, challenge me. He had eight solo tackles, which means he tackles well. So when you look at the bright spots of the game, there's bright spots, and then there's spots. Today there was a bright spot to me when I heard that Suva Kraven's MRI came out okay, that it's nothing torn, no fractures, just some good, strong rehab, and he may be back. The bye came at the right time. But as far as the game itself, it's always great to win. You know, you hear me talk about stats mean nothing, W's mean everything. And you always hear me say winning solves everything, whether it's off-the-field problems, on-the-field problems, whatever the problems might be, in any type of business or sporting activity. It solves it. And now they can come back. They've reserved some time off. And really now they can end the season 9-3 or 5-7. So I'd rather be 9-3. And I really feel, I went to the UCLA game, no due respect to UCLA, Cal, or to Notre Dame, with the right combination, the right plays, with the right desires and emotion, and, of course, breaks. You got to have breaks. I think the Trojans can finish strong. So I'm going to have a good bye week until we get it back on Thursday against Cal.
Sounds good, Coach. I will, too. Yeah, no, a whole week off from practice. So we'll be interesting not going to USC football practice this week. We got a question. So we'll a bunch of questions for you, Coach. I wanted to read the first one. He said, I didn't get to watch the game, quote-unquote, again, hashtag Pac-12 Network, laugh out loud. So my question is, did USC put together a complete game in your eyes, and do you see progress from our team heading into the last three games that give you hope we can put it all together for next year? Thanks, truly love the show, and following you both on Twitter. Fight on from Fight On in Georgia.
Well, for Fight On in Georgia, we're talking about next year. Of course, you look at next year and you look at it with a lot of question marks. What I mean by that, you got to finish this season. And when you look at next year, you get your full allotment of scholarships, which are 25, which is the first time they've had that in a long time. So you can't use that as a reason why you're not successful as far as numbers. You'll still be down 75, but I mean, all the time I hear about numbers making a difference, yet you looked in the game, and this past weekend at Washington State, they played 43 players. How many players did USC play? 43 players. I say that every Sunday when I talk, when Ted comes up. Did the numbers really make a difference on the Hail Mary play? I don't think so. Did the numbers really make a difference on the lateral that was running for a touchdown against Utah? I don't think so. You can look at it one way or another. Do you have to play against 30 players that maybe may have been at SC? Probably. Where are they great players? Could be a few of them. But you've got to think of the positives, not the negative. I always believe don't talk about or tell me how hot it is or how cold it is. We got to play this football game. Now, saying that, you've got to look and say, is Buck Allen coming back? Is Leonard Williams coming back? Is Nelson Aguilar coming back? I mean, these are things you have to look at to say how good will USC be next year. Now, I think Leonard Williams will go out. I do. I think he's done his due time. And you have to assume he'll be coming out. Will Nelson Aguilar be coming out? I think Nelson is just now starting to play in a rhythm where he should stay. But would I tell him to stay if he was my son or if he was one of my players? I'd talk to him about it, but I could not tell him what to do. was I'd feel horrible if something happened that senior year. But it's a little different now, because you have insurance policies where you can insure yourself up to $10 million or $20 million on injury clauses, such as, you know, you can never play again. Well, okay, that might help you become a better player, and you go up higher in the draft, and you make more money. There were some players last year that should have stayed in. I'll get to those in a minute. Will Buck Allen stay? I hope he stays. Will he stay? Well, we'll have to see what happens and what's best for Buck Allen and what's best for USC. Normally in these situations, players today don't look at it the way they used to. It's a money game. You take advantage of what you can make, and you sometimes go out. So that's the first three things we got to think about as far as the coming year on how good are you going to be. Just think what you might have been this year. Xavier came back, Uko came back, Bailey came back, Marcus Martin came back. I mean, a whole different thing. So you look at all of that. It's a little early to look at all of that because you've got to have certain positions fill in. You're going to be good at certain positions, obviously, but you have a young offensive line. You have a young secondary. Get some linebackers, bring them along. Defensive front, you got some defensive players that can play right now, and you go on from there. But, yeah, I think the future is bright for USC football. It certainly should be. Yeah, you've always heard me say it's the White House in college football, as far as I'm concerned. There are other White Houses, too, in other states. But I think it's the White House here in Southern California and probably in the Pac-12. So let's move on.
Yeah, you've actually brought up a good point. From Sean had a question about the sanctions, and he was talking about the numbers too. And you and I have the kind of same thought. I know when you talk to Pete Arbogast, he kind of thinks about it differently. But I didn't think sanctions had anything to do with the Hail Mary or play calling at the end of the Utah game. There's certainly sanctions have an impact. There's players on other teams, like you mentioned, that could be that USC is competing against. It's harder to practice because you don't have as many bodies and scholarships. But as far as number of guys in the game, you're playing about the right number of guys. Now, we saw Sua Cravens go down, and you have a walk-on, Matt Lopes, coming in, who's a good walk-on, and he's going to school for free because his dad's one of the athletic directors. But, you know, he could be a scholarship player somewhere. But there are some limitations there. But I think that there's limitations, and you could put limitations on this team, and maybe by the end of the season when more guys get hurt, it would be more difficult. But USC's been fairly fortunate with the amount of guys that have been injured and lost for the season this year. Not too many of them. There's been some, but not like a big rash of them. I think we saw more of that last year. And I think they've been in those games and been in position to win. And for me, I wouldn't blame – I think there's losses you could potentially blame on. You know, really, it just kind of ran out of steam and the sanctions were there. I just hadn't seen that so far this year. I think some people were – kind of making that excuse or whatever. I just didn't see it. I don't think you do either, Coach.
No, I don't. I haven't seen it since it happened. I said, why talk about things you can't control? I mean, that's the way it is. Why have distractions? Why make excuses? Hey, this is all we have. So when it's your turn to step up, you step up. It's time for you to play. Like Matt Lopes went in the game. Someone tweeted out something. I saw the tweet saying, oh, now another walk-on's playing. And, Ryan, I have to give you credit. You immediately tweeted out, yeah, but he's not a bad player. He's not a normal walk-on. And I sort of said the same thing when I retweeted, too. But, again, he's not Super Craven.
Right.
I'm not trying to say he's replacing a great athlete like that. But, again, my first comment was, and if you listened to the Trojan Brunch yesterday, the best for the team is for Juju Smith to play safety. Why? He's the same type of athlete. He would go there over for the team. How many times you guys hear me talk about get your players on the field? Do you think George Farmer should be watching? Do you think Rogers should be watching? Do you think Stevie Mitchell should be watching? Well, it's all right to watch if you got great players everywhere and you don't have any players that you need to upgrade. But if Suva Cravens go down, you got to talk to Juju. You say, we got bye week, my man. You got to go over there and you got to play that position. It's something that you've done before because we need you there. And I know what he'd have said, Coach, whatever you need,
yep,
I'll do it. He's that type of player. And you heard me say this from day one, all of our regular listeners, and Ryan, you can contest to this. I have always felt Juju should be on the defensive side of the football with Adoree, because there's too many great receivers who are over there that are watching the game. And it's great to have that supply of receivers. But you don't have players on the field that should be playing that are five-star players. Four-star players are watching or playing every other play or every four plays. Got to have those type of athletes on the field winning for you. All right, that's the answer to that question.
And you mentioned Twitter, too. You can follow Coach at Coach Harvey Hyde on Twitter, at Coach Harvey Hyde. You can follow me at Inside Troy. That's at Inside Troy, all one word. You can follow us both on Twitter, tweeting out during the games and stuff. Yeah, Coach, I agree with you. Juju's been amazing at wide receiver, three more touchdowns. But I've always felt that he should be a safety, too. But he's doing so well at receiver, and now I'm not blowing up or whatever, you know, saying that anymore. It's fine. Like, if they move him to safety, I got no issues with it. But I'm not going to be calling for that just because he's played so well at receiver right now. It's just hard to – I know there's a lot of – there's better receivers backing him up than there's safeties over there backing up Sua Cravens. But, man, he's just playing so well right now. It's hard to – it would be hard to take him away for me.
But I'd like to see him play every play. Not that he doesn't play a lot, but you've got other players too, Ryan, that are watching and – four-star, five-star players, and if given the opportunity, could certainly And if Juju's listening to this, hey Juju, I'm not telling people to do this. I'm just saying, if they need you there, I know you're the type of kid that would go there.
Oh, he would in a heartbeat.
He would go there in a heartbeat, wouldn't he?
Yeah, completely. He's one of the hardest working guys. Steve Sarkisian talked about it. Him and Nelson Aguilar, you know, come early, stay late. They're always working hard. So. High praise for, you know, Steve Sarkisian gave Sua Cravens and Adoree Jackson. It's good to see, Coach, when we do all the recruiting rankings and stuff like that. Five-star kids like, Sua Cravens. I mean, he was a five-star kid. Adoree Jackson, Juju Smith. I mean, those two guys come in as true freshmen. Huge contributions. I mean, in the Utah game, the first two touchdowns USC scored, one by Adoree Jackson, the next one by Juju Smith. True freshmen, five-star guys. So, living up to their recruiting rankings, it's always good to see.
And how about Khalil Rogers? I said during the game that he had a great game. I think I even mentioned it on the pregame show. During the spring, he was a starter, and I thought he really had a great spring. Then he got hurt. He didn't play in the fall. But he came in, I thought, and played excellent as far as at the left guard. I think Lobaton had a good game at the left tackle. But I just wish – Andre Walker, my man, Andre, I'd love to talk to him. You got to step up, big guy. You got to step up. It's November. You got to step up and get after somebody, because he's too good of talent. 18 starts he's had, and SC's got freshmen starting, and you got a guy like this with all the great potential he has. He's going to be one of these Cameron guys. He's going to be one of these guys who go to the NFL, and all of a sudden you'll see him in the Pro Bowl. It's absolutely amazing.
Well, to me, Coach, and I this was a criticism I had of the decision to switch it up. He comes in at the end of the, three quarters of the Utah game and plays well at left tackle there. And, we talk about he's going to be the left tackle on the Sunday conference call. And then for some reason on Monday, they changed their minds. And I didn't look to see how much he played, but I don't think he played at all.
He didn't play. I didn't see him in there ever.
Yeah, I never saw him. And so to me, I thought he did what was right. Now, he was slow to come back from an injury, and maybe the coaches don't trust him. Or there's something going on there, Coach. But, and I think we talked about this in the podcast last week, something's going on. But the fact that they're going in and starting Lobaton at left tackle, and that actually – Jesse Rodriguez had a question about that, so maybe we'll just talk about that now. Why do you think they stuck so long with Toa Lobaton at left tackle? Seems like he was getting beat a lot to me, and I don't think he was getting beat a lot. There might have been some continuity issues up front there, Coach, but I thought they'd give Andre Walker a chance, and it looks like he performed well against Utah, and then he just never got back in there. So I don't put the blame on Walker. I think he did what he had to do, but if he's not going to get playing time, I don't know what he can do.
Well, Yeah, I was surprised too. You know what I really thought was going to happen? I really thought they were talking about starting Lobaton the whole week to motivate Walker. This is what I thought. And I thought that when they started the game, I looked immediately. The first thing I looked at when the offense went on the field, who was that left tackle? Because I thought they'd talk about it all week then start him in the game. But they didn't do that. And he never came in and played. And that was really surprising to me. And as far as Lobaton's concerned, you got to give him a little slack here because the first time he played tackle the entire year, when you move people around in the offensive line, I was really surprised you move these many people around this far into the season. This doesn't normally happen. Never, I'm telling you, because yeah, you get the feel with who you're playing next to. You can look at a guy or a guy has a signal, he says something to you, and you know what he's communicating with you about, and you run the play. All of a sudden, Banner has somebody different playing next to him sometimes, and then you have Turek having a guy that was on the right side now on the left side, or you have Khalil Rogers there. Mama, I think, got in the game once or twice. I thought I saw him in there. Maybe I was wrong. Lobaton now moves away from your left side if you're Turek and is out another position, out to tackle. And again, he sees a whole different look and pass blocks against a whole different type of a pass blocker or a rusher or whatever. You got more of a faster guy, and inside you have more of a power guy. You normally don't make that many changes, but they did in the offensive line. You see that happening always in the NFL. One guy learns three positions, center, both guards, or tackle, or whatever. They're interchangeable. But you don't see that much in college football. So we'll see what happens this off week. I just don't think something's there with Walker, sort of like a phantom. You see him at practice, and then you see him sometimes around active, and then all of a sudden you don't see him at all. Not that he's not around, it's just he's not participating.
Hey, Coach. Okay, so let's want to get back to Jesse Rodriguez, U.S. Army retired, question about why do you think they stuck with Lobaton at left tackle so much? Seems like he was getting beat a lot to me. That's according to Jesse.
They probably knew he had to stay out there, and every play he learns more as far as being at that position. They probably didn't have any alternative. For some reason, they didn't move Gertner over there, or they never wanted to put Walker back in the game. For some reason, I don't know if Walker's being punished or I don't understand that, but obviously they think Lobaton's going to play that position, so the only way you learn how to play it is play it. And you're going to get beat at times, and times you're going to be good. So, you know, you can't learn that in practice. You got to learn it under the real movement of what happens in combat. And he may have – I didn't notice him really getting beat that often. But you probably watched him a little bit closer than I did. But I don't know. I don't know. He's the guy that's going to play that position, obviously. So
yeah.
That's why he's there.
And then just to add a second question, he goes, are defensive line stunts and twists not part of this defensive coordinator scheme? Seems like we've gone from countless drives with no pressure on the opposing quarterbacks. That's, again, from Jesse Rodriguez.
I agree with you. I see very few twists. I see very few stunts whatsoever. I think they ran three stunts, I believe, during the game where they came up with both linebackers up tight, faking to come, and then they did send Serraro and drop Pollard out to cover. I think they did it about three times, and Serraro put pressure on the quarterback. I thought early in the game they should have pressured this Falk guy immediately. The first time he came in, I'd have said, oh, my God, I'd have gone after him with everybody. And he'd said, man, this is not going to be an easy drive today. And I would have tried to get in his face more and shake him up. They allowed him to get into a rhythm. And as a young player, he got stronger as it went along, but you really didn't get in his face much or knock him down. Interceptions, but you'll throw his rhythm off, and he'll overshoot some passes and throw an interception here or there, and you sort of keep somebody off balance. The twist, I saw maybe in the game two or three twists. I'm not sure why they don't do that more often, twist, and then bring a delayed stunt around from the outside where the two guys switch out and open a path completely straight up the middle. They don't do that. They're very vanilla, if you know what I mean. They're very base. They're very base in what they do defensively regarding the front four guys. They were very concerned about containing this guy, and I think they did that. Because they lost contain, if you remember, a week ago against the big kid Travis Wilson from Utah, and that cost him probably the game. I'm not saying it did, but it certainly did hurt them. They might have still had a field goal there. But, no, very, very basic on defense. Do not take many chances, but I'll tell you a guy I'd take chances with is Suva Craven. I have never seen him yet stun or blitz where he hadn't made a play or hurried the guy. Sack. Loss on the run or loss on the play, he makes things happen. He really makes things happen. He's a great player, and I certainly would get him more involved in the game on defense.
Yeah, hard to argue with that. well, thanks for those, Jesse. Barcel and Diamond Bar wants to know, what happened to the art of backpedaling? I don't remember Daryl Green from the Redskins playing with his back to the ball. Why is this new technique being taught in football? That's Marcel in Diamond Bar.
You know, that's a good point. If you played defense, you used to remember your back pedal, you watch the belt buckle, and you play inside or outside, depending where you are on the field, and you watch him, and when he starts to come up to you, and you turn and run with him, or you come back and do whatever you need to do. Now there's a new technique that you'll line up inside, and you'll back up, taking away the inside and forcing them to run outside routes. I don't understand that, but again, you see it everywhere, so obviously they feel there's an advantage of playing defensive back that way. I wouldn't play it that way, because I think that you're more in control when you're looking straight ahead. And when you're playing, man, you can see a little bit more of what's going on. But when you turn your back to the line of scrimmage and you're backing back like that, if there's a run, it's a running play, you really don't know what's going on. So I like the old way, as you've been taught, obviously. I'm sure you were a defensive back where you backpedal out of there and you keep your eyes on the belt buckle and you play the game. Because the belt buckle goes where the guy goes. You don't worry about all his moves and so on. You keep your two-yard difference from him, and when he breaks, you break, or you move when he moves, and you make the play. You don't usually, normally, you didn't see a lot of interceptions off of playing man, because you're all over him like a blanket. But you looked at the ball when he looked at the ball. But they're playing it that way. And that's why they're throwing the ball to the shoulder a lot, the outside shoulder comebacks, because they're giving him that type of shot to throw the ball.
And we got one last one from Melvin. He says, I see that USC's look good, even broken records, this year against teams like Washington State, Colorado, and Fresno State. They won a tough physical game against Stanford, but then they couldn't stand toe-to-toe with other teams when maybe toughness would have won the game at the end. So my question is, how do you feel about the rest of the season for USC against some good, tough teams like UCLA and Notre Dame? Are we tough enough to play them to the end? Melvin.
Melvin, very good point. Toughness is being physical, okay? That's what I think you mean. Is SC physical enough to go to the pits, go to war against these guys? If they run out of ammo, then they draw the bayonet. I somewhat guess they are. I'd like to see it happen. I'd like to see them be physical, because they're going to have to be physical. The offensive line, especially against UCLA. I went to the UCLA game, and they had a great defensive game this past weekend against Arizona. Either Arizona was off, or UCLA and their secondary just shut down their receivers, and they have great receivers. So UCLA was into it. They were into it and had a great game against Arizona. Came out of that with a win. Nice win. So UCLA appears to be more physical. They've got great D-line, linebackers fly around. Secondary's been playing well. So it's going to be a real challenge for the offensive line and getting the running game going. And what UCLA has done, too, is they brought Hundley back into the offense. And what I mean by that, the early part of the season, it's almost like they made a deal with Hundley. If you come back, we won't run you, so you won't get injured in the NFL. But the last couple of games, they said, we need you to run the ball. We need you to open it up. And this is what they've done, and it certainly has opened up and made them a complete offensive football, different offensive football team. They are completely a threat now. And now you have to stop the running back, who's had a great year. I think his name is Perkins or whatever. He's been over 1,000 yards in rushing. And Hundley throws the ball hard enough to, basically, you know what I saw Saturday? I thought he threw the ball too hard for sometimes his receivers to catch. But I'm sure they'll work on that this week. But he's a great athlete. You got to stop him. And I hate to say this, USC hasn't shown me that they can stop an athletic quarterback. And that's one concern I have as far as playing not only Hundley, but also playing Everett Colson. I mean, that kid is a playmaker. Notre Dame rides his shoulders on offense. I mean, really. So these are the two big things defensively. I think USC has to be really ready to be challenged, and also Cal. Cal scores points. I mean, Cal can move the football. Don't overlook Cal for UCLA. We shouldn't be talking about UCLA. Talking about Cal. Cal blew out Oregon State the other night. Cal scores points. So, you know, it's going to be a battle on a Thursday night in the Coliseum because everybody battles in the Pac-12. Everybody battles. I don't know how many people saw or stayed up for the Utah-Arizona State game. What a great game. And then this Phillips, this Mr. Automatic, the field goal kicker, in overtime, they ice him. His own coach iced him, thank goodness, called a timeout, and he missed it. Then he came back when he had another check. He's Mr. Automatic. He missed the second one. So then Arizona State went down, kicked field goal, beat him 19-16. So, wow, I'll tell you, this conference is special. And really, every week you look at it and you say, my goodness, what's going to happen this weekend?
We will see. It's going to be interesting stuff, especially in the Pac-12 South. But, Coach, thanks again for coming on the show. Always fun to chat with you. And a little more upbeat this week, which was nice. Talk about USC win as opposed to another last-second loss. So good stuff there. So thanks again.
Thank you, guys. And for everybody out there, thank you for listening. And have a great week. Enjoy the week because next Thursday, not this Thursday, the following Thursday, it's tee it up again. Put it on a tee and kick off for another exciting football game.
All right. Well, thanks again, Coach, and everyone else. We're going to be back in a minute talking with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater.
Oh, man.
What's wrong?
It's my marketing guy. I can't get in touch with him, and I'm still waiting on simple website changes to get done.
Who are you using?
Some cheap and easy website company. I just can't get results. It's so frustrating.
I never had that problem with my marketing company. I use Circle Marketing. They're always available, very friendly, and do great work. My business has seen improvements. They handled my website, online ads, and much more. Go to CircleMarketing.com and see if they're right for you.
CircleMarketing.com, huh? Well, I'll go there right now.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back here on the Peristyle Podcast, joined by USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber, fresh off his return from the Palouse, where we were both up there. A little cold. I heard, Dan, you had to do a little ice scraping on the rental car Sunday morning coming back. It was chilly up there, man.
Yeah, it's just too early for it to be that cool. And I mean, it was a bad day, bad weekend for those folks who are used to it. So, you know, for us, it was, which I guess makes the point. That team, young as they are, handled it again. They handle weather. They really do some, you know, mature things in terms of, you know, how they go about things. You watch a kid like Gigi Smith and, you know, just adapt to it, you know, have fun with it, get it done, you know, and I give them all the credit in the world. These kids just go out and, you know, for a team with as many freshmen who have to contribute as much as this team does, which I don't know if there's ever been a USC team, you know, comparable, and I don't know if there's ever been a team at this level, you know, with requiring comparable, you know, contributions from true freshmen, but they just go out and get it done. The more you think about the way they get it done, the more it makes it how difficult it is to accept those two last-second losses, which, you know, this is a team that ought to be pretty much the toast of college football, you know, at 8-1, and, you know, totally in control of the Pac-12 with the best record in the Pac-12. And it's a tough deal when you think of, you know, what might have been and, you know, almost was.
Well, I want to talk about the Washington State game, 44-17 win up there. Look, you know, there was some struggles at times, but wanted to get to some questions on that. And the big news was about Sua Cravens. And so here's our first voicemail question, Dan, talking about that.
Hey, Coach and Ryan, this is Tarek here in Salt Lake City. I was just, you know, as everyone was, I was very scared when I saw Sua Cravens go down that way. But I was very impressed with the play of Quentin Powell. He looked like he was basically in on every play around, you know, and on the tackles and doing pretty well in coverage too in the flats. Do you think with Sua down, he should be the next guy up? I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Thank you as always and fight on.
Well, I think the point is they're going to play a Cal team coming up that's very similar to Washington State. But then they're going to play UCLA and Notre Dame teams that are not exactly similar, you know, to the Cal-Washington State. So I think the thing about Sua that was so impressive and so valuable is they could use him anywhere, everywhere, you know, true safety, nickel guy coming in off the edge, playing the run, you know, pretty much at the line of scrimmage. So they really don't have anybody. And I know Sarkis last night was talking about, you know, we got to recruit guys like that. Yeah, I mean, how many are there in college football like that? You know, Sua and Shaq Thompson, we know about. I don't know that list is a whole long, you know, really a long one. So. But you were correct about Quentin Powell. He was active. He runs to the ball. He's around the play. He does a lot of good things, and he will tackle you in space. You got to think. I mean, it took him a while. I don't know what they were thinking, where he got lost on their, you know, depth chart, how they couldn't figure out how to get a guy that can do what he could do into the game just because they didn't like the numbers on the scale. But so without a doubt, Quentin, I think Charles Bart, you know, Charles Burks, you saw, you know, he's active and he's an edge rusher that is pretty relentless, a tough kid, and loves rushing the quarterback. And so they go from the number one passer in the country in Connor Holiday to the number two passer in the country, Jared Goff. So probably a good thing those games come back to back. But I think Quentin Powell is one of the answers. Whether, you know, anybody has you know, all of the answers to replace Sua, you know, Cravens, probably not. But Quentin certainly will be you know, at the head of the line to do that.
It'll be interesting, Dan. For me, it's like last, you know, against Utah when Chad Wheeler goes down. Andre Walker comes into the game, but he's not really used after that. During the week, they kind of mixed up the lineup and moved Toa Lobendon to left tackle. This time, Sua Cravens goes down. They bring in walk-on Matt Lope, so I thought they did a pretty good job in there. Was very active as well. But my guess is they're going to move some things around, and maybe you do see a Quinton Powell. But just to kind of fill in the role that Cravens was playing, which wasn't really up near the line of scrimmage as much. He was more kind of dropping back in coverage more than he has been the last few weeks. So it'll be interesting to see what they do if they shake things up. Even though Matt Lopes came in during the game, Sark even showed just the previous week they have a tendency to kind of mix up the lineup and change things up during that week. And now they actually have, you know, a whole week off to kind of figure out what they want to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, Matt Lopes kind of gives you that that slot cover guy, you know, the nickel guy to some extent. And so we'll see. I think they move around. One of the good things I do think that for that secondary, a lot of it is how did you practice? That's a really good thing. I think, you know, Coach Edward has done a really nice job with, you know, if you practice well, if you're, you know, ready to go, you're going to get a shot. And I know we call, you know, Matt Lopes a walk-on, but he's probably, you know, USC's had a few guys in recent years that walk-on is probably not the exact nomer for the, you know, the talent that they bring, you know, to the game. And I think and Matt Lopes is one of those kids that tough and decently quick and smart and can play the ball. I thought they played as a group. They played the ball really well. And that's the benefit, I think, of playing a team that throws it 66 times. And, you know, Connor Halliday, you know, only got to throw it 9 of those times before, you know, broke his leg there. But the Luke Falk kid, again, another former walk-on, I thought threw the ball well, played with a lot of poise, you know, a better quarterback than you'll see at, you know, a lot of programs, you know, in the Power 5 conferences. I mean, they do attract those kids that, you know, can make plays and, you know, put the ball up there. And USC did a decent job. They were helped a little bit by some drops and in that weather. You could understand it, although USC didn't really drop many. But I think a combination of Quinton Powell, Matt Lopes, and we'll see, you know, where it goes, you know, from there. But I thought they did, and Sark pointed that out, and I agree that he thought the coaches did a really good job in working the rotations and getting guys in and having them ready to play, and I think they definitely did.
I want to talk about the secondary a little bit. Got a question from Twitter, USC 805 fan, and he wants to – he has a question for you, Dan. He said, hasn't it been enough time for Josh Shaw to come back after lying to USC? Seems excessive for 9 games. So maybe talk about the secondary and what do you think about Josh Shaw?
Yeah, I think it's I'll give the same answer Sark gave Sunday night. Yeah, it's taken way longer than it should have. You know, are they overly cautious because – you can't prove a negative, and what if we find, you know, we keep hearing that there is no other there, that it was, you know, kind of a disturbing the peace kind of, you know, argument situation that somebody called the police and ended up jumping off a balcony stupidly and somehow doesn't understand how bad this is going to look if it gets put out by USC. Obviously, USC put it out, which, again, shows as much lack of understanding about the situation, because it was obvious, if you understand everything they said they did in trying to vet the story, they didn't believe the story. Why they put it out, and that's the problem on this issue, is I think USC has some culpability in the situation Josh finds himself in. At this point, obviously he does as well. 9 games long enough, darn right. I mean, I think if what we know, we think we know, we've heard from lots of different people involved in angles of this, from different, you know, story, you know, different places in this story. As Sark said last night, the process has taken way longer, hasn't gotten back to him to make the call, which it sounds like, you know, if he gets the okay, it's up to Sark to decide. How it's not come back to Sark, he says he doesn't really understand how it's taken this long. But, yes, it seems like way too long, way too unfair, based on what we think we know about where the story is, absolutely. you know, as far as the overall secondary, you know, who knew that Adoree Jackson would be able to possibly be challenging, you know, as one of the very, very best cornerbacks in the Pac-12. And they've done a nice job, I think, in setting up their defense. I know people ask the question, well, are they picking on him? Why is he getting singled out? And what's happening is USC setting up their defense, so he is the primary guy, and he does get a chance to play people one-on-one. And I was surprised a little bit that they were very pleased that they tackled well in open space and they put, you know, corners in places where they had to do that. And you just think, wait a minute, this is USC. USC's corners ought to be able to tackle in space. You know, I mean, you recruited some of the better kids in the country. Don't be surprised 9 games into the season when they come up and make plays. That almost indicates a little bit of a, are you coaching out of fear that they won't make the play? Are you going to, you know, coach them more like Saturday where you just say, we're expecting you to make that play. Make it. And they mostly did. And that's a good thing. And again, it's a tribute to a lot of these young guys.
Let's go to Jesse Rodriguez, U.S. Army retired. He said, I was surprised that we couldn't get any push on Wazoo's defensive line in the first half. I feel that we are bigger and stronger up front than anything Wazoo can put out there on the offensive and defensive lines. Thanks for your unbiased opinion and fight on from Jesse Rodriguez.
Hey, Jesse, thanks for your service. Great to hear from you. Two things. The strength of Washington State is their three defensive linemen. They're tough, physical guys, but you're right, USC still has an edge physically. I think what you see is the thing that makes you wonder about the USC running game is they seem to be able to run some things really nicely. At other things, they just get jammed up when it looks like there's six defenders in the hole or where it looks like the one guy you needed to block at the point of attack, nobody even touched. What that tells me at times is the complexity that they ended up with screwing them up so much during the Lane era is still there, you know, that it's not as basic and not as simple and straightforward as it maybe needs to be for this kind of a young offensive line. And yet you still see they can set things up, and then they can get Buck off tackle, for example, and they can pull, and they can get out there quickly, and you think, wow, you know, all you got to do is create a seam for Buck. The disappointing thing for me in the run game, especially for a team that says we're a run-first team, is the inability to create seams for Buck much of the time. I mean, Buck is the kind of guy, you give him a seam at the line of scrimmage, point of attack, and the defense has got real problems. And it looks like they're kind of guessing as to how do we do that. And it just seems like, why do they have so many kind of busted plays with, as you say, a big athletic, although young, offensive line, and Buck Allen, the best running back in the Pac-12. Why does Buck, for example, I don't know what he ran at 34 yards in the first half on 11 carries or whatever. That's probably not acceptable. And so they kept him in and kept after him, and you know, he lost the one on a penalty, the 149 yarder. But he stayed in there and got his sixth, you know, 100 yard plus game, and good, you know, good for Buck and all of that. I know people say, oh, they left him in too long or left him in too long. I don't know. I don't have a real strong opinion about that. They don't have a lot of guys to put in. But yeah, I think that's a point of you know, question as to what's going on with the lack of push and the busted plays, especially in the first half.
Let's see. I want to go to Patrick in Chicago. This season has been an emotional roller coaster. Is USC vastly, quote, underachieving, or are we just, quote, overrated? Love the podcast, and thanks for your hard work, Patrick in Chicago.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, overrated, they're not in the top 25 right now. And, you know, two teams that they absolutely beat in every way you can beat except on the scoreboard at the end of the game are, you know, 10 places ahead of them. So So are they overrated? I don't know. I think if they played Arizona State again, who wins? If they play Arizona again, who wins? Were they overrated when they were ranked ninth? I don't know. If they win those two games, if both of those games are 15 seconds shorter, USC's 8-1 and probably ranked, what, fifth, fourth? I don't know. Right behind Oregon? Yeah. So are they overrated? Not now. I think they're – are they the best three-loss team in the country? Yeah, probably. What good is that? I don't know how much good that does. People can say, oh, they could have lost the Arizona game. Well, the way it turned out, if they make the field goal, yeah. But should Arizona have even been in that game? No, of course not. And obviously the Arizona State game, no way you can lose that. As Ryan pointed out last week, they have one out of 166 chances of losing those two games the way they had the ball. In the opponent's territory with the opponent with none or one timeout left and all. I mean, there's just no way you could have lost Arizona State and Utah the way you did. And so, emotional roller coaster, I'll go with you. Overrated, maybe not. Could have had, one of those storybook years. And if they could have played, to the finish, and gotten a little help probably from the sidelines, a little better calls, both offense and defense, we'd be, talking about can they get in the playoffs? And so that's kind of where I am on this one. I think they're pretty talented with all the limits that, they've got on them in terms of numbers and youth. There's a lot of talent. I mean, you got the sense, for example, the Spokane media thought it looked like NFL guys going against high school kids in terms of the matchups with the wide receivers against their or punt returners against their punt return coverage team. And that we haven't seen enough. I mean, there are a lot of games where Juju just disappeared or Nelson, or, you just didn't see them get to use the kind of athleticism and speed that we thought they had. And then all of a sudden there are games where they're just not involved. And I don't think that was Juju's fault or Nelson's fault. But Washington State has seen a lot of good teams. They've seen a lot of teams try to, do things against them athletically, and they were really impressed with just the fact USC's ability to create separation with their, receivers was, I think, kind of eye-opening, to those folks. And it's what we thought we were going to see much of the year and didn't see, for example, at Boston College until it was too late. Didn't see it, toward the end of games if they were leading. And probably needed to see more up.
All right, let's see. ALW wants to know, what do you think of Buck Allen's NFL future, and who does he remind you of from the past?
I think one of the reasons he's got a great NFL future, he's such a tough kid, smart kid, practices so hard. He wants to be so good, and he's been gifted with just terrific hands and a sense of where he is, on the football field and, in the right system in the NFL, he could be awfully, tough because I don't know that there's an NFL running back who catches the ball any better than Buck does. So, with what they're able to do with their quarterbacks and tailor their systems and Buck is just bigger, stronger, and quicker than a lot of the defensive backs or whoever they're going to try to cover him with. So I think he's got that going for him. And I do think when all you got to do is create a seam, I think NFL offenses will be able to figure out exactly how to do that with Buck. In terms of who he reminds you of, he's an interesting, he's not as tall as, say, a Marcus Allen, or maybe not as kind of limber and loosey-goosey and all that. I mean, Marcus was just such a special player, but he's more, the way running backs are now, once you get past the 6-foot mark, you're kind of a tall running back. So you put him in the category, even though, you know, you're not as tall as a lot of the guys that, we used to see, the super great, old-time guys like, say, Eric Dickerson, for example, or, guys that, big, tall guys. But he's more along that line, more of a glider than a pounder, not the real compact sort of a guy that the NFL's kind of gone to. I don't really think I could pick somebody out and say that's kind of who he is. At like 215 pounds, he's kind of mid size, I guess. Just a little over 6 feet. Kind of mid size there, or towards the tall end of the spectrum, I guess now. But I think Buck's kind of his own guy, and uniquely gifted. And I'm looking for him to have a really nice NFL career.
All right. Let's see. Jeff K. in Altadena. Do you feel this team is getting better from week to week? We all know Sark can recruit, but what has he done thus far to make you believe he can take good talent, enhance it, and turn it into good, and turn that good talent into great talent? Carroll was masterful at it. Kiffin was horrible at it. And the proof is in the NFL. Can Carroll NFLers have far outperformed Kiffin NFLers? Where do you think Sark stands? Great work, fellas. Fight on. Jeff K.
Jeff, I think we all have assumptions. And one of them, I think, just throughout it, that we all know Sark can recruit. I think that's to be determined. I think recruiting at USC on a national stage and really having your finger on the pulse in Florida, for example, or knowing what Southern, or California kids or Southern California kids really make the difference or difference makers, and how you go about that and how you coordinate it all and all of that. I think that this is a learning experience. So I think we're learning how this is going to go. It was more of a regional kind of, and pick a kid here, pick a kid there when you're at Washington. So this is a big change for, I think Sark in terms of recruiting. Okay, so we'll take that point. In terms of developing players, I think that that really has to be, we'll see. Are they more developed and better off than say last year? I will say this. I think, the ability to incorporate the freshmen has been really good, and it's been different ways in different places in terms of the teaching and different positions. There's a lot of talent with this freshman group. I've already said it on this podcast that maybe a little more basic in the offensive line would have been the way you'd like to go. I think a lot of the real up-tempo stuff in the spring and the summer has kind of gone by the wayside in the fall. I think there were some really good things. I think it helped the defense a lot to see a lot of that up-tempo. I think it helped the conditioning a good bit. In terms of the sheer execution, play after play after play, I don't think it's helped them in the penalties. And I do wonder if you really have an extensive and fairly complex playbook, does that help you develop, especially offensive line, for example? I thought that was one of the real negatives of the offensive line development in the last few years, was an overly complex playbook that where it had guys thinking more than playing. And that's what you don't want to have happen here, is have guys thinking more than playing. One would like to see the ability to just go out and play and not have to spend, a great deal of time wondering if you're going to get the ball. I mean, I think there's a somewhat of a, because of the way it started out this year, where, guys would disappear for games and things like that, you do wonder how that carries through in practice, where you'd like to have a sense more of, this is how we do it, this is who we are, this is, we're going to do it really well, and it's going to be really difficult for you to stop what we do, to develop a personality that says, this is what USC football is, you know, under Sark, and this is how it's going to play. I think under Lane, for example, one of the things is USC football, again, had a kind of odd personality. I mean, it was like, well, which team's going to show up? Which game plan's going to, you know, matter? There's still a little bit of that. And that's, you know, that's, I think that's an issue. And I think you help develop kids better when the team has a personality. You know, obviously Pete's teams did. And that really, I think, when kids know who they are and how they're supposed to play, it helps them just get better. It get better at that. If they're not sure, I think the development doesn't go as well. Obviously, this team is way ahead in terms of no USC team. I don't think you could come up with a USC team that's had this many freshmen that not only contributed but absolutely had to contribute. And it's pretty amazing. And I know, you know, Sark, and this is what you would do, is now talking more about the future after, you know, the two losses this year that, you know, were so difficult to take. You start talking about freshmen and coming back and what this future means and all of that. But I think, you know, I think they've got a real chance with the kind of freshman talent that they've got to and the maturity. I mean, to have Juju Smith and Adoree Jackson and Toa Lobodon are really leaders. I mean, they just they don't act like, think like freshmen. They don't practice like freshmen, and that's a big part of the battle, I think. But again, kids like that you recruit, and they come in there, you know, they come in with those attitudes. Then your job is just to get out of the way and let them become as good as they can be, and just don't do anything to, you know, stunt that.
We had a question from Larry, Dan, and I tweeted, I think he's referring to a tweet I made watching the Florida State Notre Dame game when we were in the press box kind of watching that. And Florida State, I believe this was the right thing, but I think Florida State was like 3rd and 6 late in the game, and they had like a little dump off to the running back that went for a big play. And I tweeted that's what USC wanted to try to do on that 3rd and 2 against Utah. And so he says, I saw your tweet during that Florida State 3rd and 6 play. Don't you find it a little ironic that one coach is a genius and another a fool for calling nearly identical plays in very similar situations? I guess for those that second guess play calling based only on results, it makes perfect sense. Hope you and Dan have simmered down some, simmered down a bit since the Utah game, because I really enjoy the information you provide on USC football. Looking forward to a more upbeat podcast after WSU. Thanks, Larry. And I'm still getting kind of questions about this, Dan. And my take was always that Pinner had one catch the entire year. This I didn't do the research on the Florida State play, if that's a play they ran more, but it's not a play we saw a lot in practice. We've never seen it in a game. That was my concern with the play, but maybe kind of get your thoughts on it.
Well, what was really stupid about the play call, and it was a stupid play call for those who think it was a good play call, it was the second hurry up, run to the line of scrimmage, get Kessler under center, snap the ball right away, and fool them. Play call. They did it once before in the Utah game. How'd that turn out? 4th and 1 at the 27. Oh, yeah. Fumble. Second time they call it, they basically say, this is what bothers you about the thinking of the two-play calls. When USC got to the Utah 27 there, all they needed is a first down, game's over. USC had two plays to go 2 yards and decided they had to fool them on both plays. And they run a play, the first play, that stops the clock if it's not completed. Then they run to the line of scrimmage. No time for the quarterback to see what's going on. He's going to throw the ball. They don't know how they're going to defend it. He gets up there, but before he gets his hands under center, Utah, as they're wont to do, calls out a signal. Utah's famous for this, calling out signals that sound like the snap count. Is that illegal? Yeah. Do they get called for it? Almost never. Did they do it? Yeah. Did Max Turk snap the ball before Cody got under the center? Yeah. Did the ball get loose? Yeah. Did Cody make a great play to keep it from being a fumble? Yeah. What was he able to do? All he could do was try to push the ball forward so it was an incomplete pass rather than a fumble. Had he even gotten his hands on it, could he have completed it to Penner? Maybe. Would Penner have gotten the first down? Probably not. Was it a good call? No. It was a dumb call. A really dumb call. It was a call that says to your team, we're third and two in their territory. All we need is a first down, and we can only do that by tricking them because we're not good enough. That's what's bad about that play call. I didn't bring up the Utah game. You did. It was a dumb, dumb, dumb play call. Got it? For all kinds of reasons. You didn't put the ball in your best player's hands. You didn't put the ball in your team's hands. You pretty much took it out of their hands. You know, we know, for example, Max is not ideal with his, he's 6'6 and really long arms. It's always been a struggle for him to snap the ball to Cody under center. I mean, and they're roommates and they're best friends. It just is adding a layer of difficulty to that play. Then you go hurry up. That adds a layer of difficulty. Then you're throwing the ball, which will stop the clock. That adds a layer of complexity that never should have been there. And then you're throwing it to Julio Penner, who's been targeted exactly one time this year. Hello? Don't get me started.
Sorry, okay, I know. Well,
I'm just kidding. But no, it was a bad. It wasn't the same call that Florida State made. Florida State threw it to a running back who had caught the ball and turned it upfield, knew how to do it. They didn't do it in a way that made it much more difficult for Jameis Winston to do it. They did it the way they normally do it. Okay, do you have to be a smart guy to, you know, a genius? No, you don't necessarily have to be. You just go to, you know, what we do well. You don't go to the, you know, as Lane famously once said, the third column on the play sheet. Those are the ones he said, they don't work so well often. You don't usually call them. Don't ever call them, okay? Never. If they're in the third column, don't call them.
They could make a T-shirt about that. So, yeah, hopefully, Larry, you felt that the podcast was a little more upbeat today, but I'm still getting emails about that, and I think it's been a point of contention where people think, I agree with Dan 100%, and he even gives more reasons than I do of why it wasn't a good play call. But, yeah, that's it wasn't
just the fact that it was a pass pattern eliminates it from being a good play call. In a game where 20 seconds, gee, what if they had the 20 seconds on the other end of the clock? Would that have helped? Well, since they scored with, 5 seconds ago, whatever it was, or ran that play with 8 seconds ago, 5 seconds ago, minus 20 seconds probably would have really helped.
Yeah. All right. Well, good stuff. I'm sorry we're ending on a note like that, everyone. But
and we're not mad or anything. It's just, it does get a little frustrating. You're down on the field, and you go, what the hello? What just happened? You know, the ball got thrown kind of right at us. Exactly. You could see Cody was just fighting to keep it. I didn't know that they'd called out the signal. Obviously, I'm probably as much into the game as the Pac-12 officials who allowed Utah to call out a signal that threw USC off. But it was hard to believe your eyes. I mean, Utah had it covered perfectly. And you took away the chance to read the play. I mean, it just to try to trick them. I mean, the thought was, okay, every time USC runs up and does that hurry up, they run the ball. This time they were going to hurry up and throw it, and that would really fool Utah, which, of course, it didn't fool them at all. And I know there were people who say, well, why didn't Cody just throw the ball to the tight end who was wide open? Cody, you know, had no chance to do any of that because of the play call. That was the problem.
All right. Well, thanks again. And I'm sorry, like I said, sorry we had to end on that, but we've been getting a lot of questions about it on Twitter, emails and people sending, you know, talking to the show. So I wanted to address that one last time and at least get – that's what our thoughts are. You can agree or disagree, whatever you want to do on that one. But thanks again, Dan, for coming on the show. And got a week off here heading into the bye week against Cal.
Yeah, it's basketball. Basketball week. This is how it used to be in Kentucky where you, if you were covering Kentucky, you get so far into football season and people would start saying, when does basketball season start? So I guess it starts this week, you know, for USC, and we'll be able to do some basketball this week, and that'll work out well. And, you know, they got the three games, and this should certainly end on a high note. And you'll just see it. I guess we should throw the scenario out that if it's a three-way tie at 7-2 in the South with USC, Arizona, and Arizona State, and UCLA ends up as the number four team in the Pac-12, and USC would have been the only team of the three tied to beat the number four team in the Pac-12 South with the better best record, USC somehow miraculously would move on. So obviously what has to happen is UCLA can't lose so many that they end up lower than fourth, and Arizona has to beat Arizona State, and USC has to win out.
Yeah.
So is there a chance? Mathematically, yeah. And in that early year, a couple of those things did happen. You know, that first year that Pete turned around when they ended up, you know, fourth in the nation and didn't win the Pac-12 and ended up in the Orange Bowl anyway. A lot of things had to happen and go right, and they did. So I guess you could say historically you're hoping that maybe that happens.
We will see. But it'll be a lot of interesting people watching TVs over the next few weeks, USC football fans included. Thanks very much, Dan, and everyone else. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. We're back in the studio this week. Not on the road anymore, and I hope you enjoy the show, and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.